Us too.
Okay, cool. Countdown.
All right. 3, 2, 1.
Hello and welcome to High and Low, a Curse Law podcast with your host, me, Spencer, as usual, and all the way from somewhere, hanging out with two cats, is Joel.
Yes, Joel, and a guest. And we have a guest.
Yeah, his roommate or something.
Yep, we're roomies. We just hang out in the same studio apartment. It's Sarah from the Please Don't Send Me Into Outer Space podcast.
Yay.
Hey guys.
Okay. So,
sorry, Freya is down here. She wants to play, but...
That's cute.
Yeah. Okay.
Keep your dog off the podcast.
I just found out... Oh, sorry.
Now she is laying down. Nope, she's getting back up. Okay. Okay, so this episode we are going to talk about Wedding Ring from 1950, starring Toshiro Mifune and Kinuyo Tanaka.
Mm-hmm.
And the husband's
Tsukichi Uno.
Yeah. Well, you knew one half of that, Joel.
I did.
Uno.
I said Tsukichi Uno.
Yeah, never mind. That's a dumb joke. So, yeah, we watched this other movie.
We did?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, 1950. Why did you pick Wedding Ring?
It was available.
Okay, it wasn't that available. It was kind of... Luckily, it was on Filmstruck, but it seemed like most people couldn't find this, like the other people that we try to have as a guest.
Yeah, true.
It's like part of a box set, I think, on the Eclipse series for the director, Kaisuke Kinoshita.
Yeah, I checked, and I don't think Ozu had 150, or he might have one. There wasn't much to pick from for this year, really.
Right. You don't like Ozu anyway, so...
I like some.
Uh-huh.
You guys are picking by year?
Uh-huh.
The way it goes is we do the Kurosawa movie from that year, and then we pick another Japanese movie from the same year and compare.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So we did Scandal last week. And this week, it's Wedding Ring with Toshiro Mifune, who's also in Scandal.
Or Engagement Ring, depending on your translation.
Mm-hmm. Or Konyaku Yubiwa.
Yeah, I checked Wikipedia and there's like 7 Japanese movies from this year.
They also have the name. Oh, you mean in total?
In total. Ah,
okay.
And I don't see...
We watched 2 of them.
Yeah, I don't see Ozu.
No.
Yeah.
That's all right.
Yeah, so for the other, for Rashomon, we're going to figure something out, but later.
Yeah.
Alright, so, yep, this is a romance, so my original idea was to have Beau North, who is a romance writer. She wrote a great book called Longborn Songbird. All you listeners should buy it. I bought it and read it. It's really good. It's
especially if you like Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah, it's Pride and Prejudice set in 1940s South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah.
I think I would like that.
I think so, too.
Yeah, it's my first Jane Austen exposure, and I want to read more Jane Austen.
I love Jane Austen.
Yeah.
I'd
rather
yeah.
talk about her than this movie, because there's not much to go on.
This has got stuff. This has got some things.
Yeah.
Have you seen any other Kazuki Kinoshita movies?
I saw The Portrait from 1948 or 7, which was written by Kurosawa. Which, just like this movie, is just okay.
This movie was great.
Did you love it?
No, it was okay. You're right. It was just okay. It was. I'm glad I watched it, especially seeing Toshiro doing things other than being the
tough guy.
The tough guy or anything like that, yeah.
Well, this one, he was sexy.
Yeah, we get to see him in a nice tight pair of bathing briefs.
Yeah, it's like high-waisted booty shorts.
Mm-hmm.
Showing off them gams.
He was an attractive guy. I think I can understand her attraction to him. Especially, like, given the circumstances with her husband.
Yeah.
Yeah, who would have?
A young doctor from town, you know? Get along.
I'm not trying to show off here, but...
Stop showing off.
I had to call a fire department. Got a little too hot in parts.
What?
There's a scene where he's going to go swimming in his little swim trunk, and it's like, damn, he was a good-looking man.
Yeah, he could have been the James Bond. Japanese James Bond.
I'm surprised he never showed up in any of them as like a villain or something.
True, huh? Yeah.
I imagine he was probably like told them no, or he didn't care enough.
After 1941, he probably just was like, no more American movies ever.
Yeah. I thought you meant the year, but I remembered he did the Spielberg's greatest mistake.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I'm sure the year was fine.
Yeah. Okay,
so let me synopsize this movie. There's not that much to go off of. Wedding Ring. So the situation is that there is a jewelry store that is owned by, well, it's not owned by Noriko. Noriko is running this jewelry store, and she's the main female lead.
Oh, that is played correct. By
Kunio Tanaka,
who is in she's in a couple of Mizoguchi movies. I've seen two of them: Ugetsu and Sancho the Bailiff. And she's in The Life of Oharu, which also stars Toshiro Mifune. It's the one Mizoguchi movie Toshiro did. I think it's the only one. Anyways.
Well, I feel like I've seen Ugetsu looking at the cover, but I'm not sure if I have.
About two like peasants from a village go to the big city. And they try to make it rich, basically. And one of them kind of... I forgot one storyline, but the other main one is like he starts dating this woman and having an affair. And then there's a twist where you learn she's a ghost.
And oh, yeah. I totally have seen this movie. Yeah,
Ugetsu's really good.
I don't really remember it. I probably wasn't paying enough attention. I better rewatch right now.
Yeah.
I gave it a perfect score, so I guess I liked it.
Well, it's Mizoguchi, so it's really good.
Is she the main ghost girl in it?
I think she is. Or she might be one of the wives. Because the wives have a kind of a subplot, too.
Oh. I don't mean to sound, like, offensive or anything, but is it just me, or are there a lot of storylines like this in Japanese cinema?
What?
Unrequited
love or unfulfilled love?
I haven't seen much, like, romance Japanese movies. Like, there's a whole subgenre of like the woman movie, which is female focused and about usually romance in some way. But in my exposure, I kind of see that of like the two or three I've seen.
I know that Japan and China are two very different places. But in my experience, it's a very common theme in Chinese movies and stories. I think it may be something culturally in common that maybe in Eastern cultures, there's a tendency to feel responsible to do what's right. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
I don't know enough about Japanese or Chinese culture to really comment.
Okay. Just an observation.
Well, even in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, there's the unrequited love, like, subplot of that wushu, you know, action movie. Like, oh, I've always loved you from afar. Oops, I've been poisoned.
Yeah, and even with, like, Wong Kar-wai with In the Mood for Love.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's other movies. I just know that one because of Next Picture Show.
2046, which is a sequel, despite, you know, people saying that it's not a sequel. It is completely a sequel to In the Mood for Love. That also has a lot of unrequited love, but it's also, it's pretty...
He's turned into a less nice person.
Yeah.
Is it like a sequel, like Sanjuro to Yojimbo?
No, it's like if there was a... Even though one of the main characters is the main character in 2046, it's almost like it's a spin-off movie because he goes up and does his own thing, and we see him go through a series of women while he's writing this book, which is called 2046. And, like, you can watch it without having watched In the Mood for Love, but
okay.
It's like at the end, he directly references the relationship he had and why he's so troubled now or whatever.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, like, you know, this remind me of Ozu because there's situations like that. Yeah. Yeah. Wedding Ring.
Okay. We're bouncing around.
Yeah, yeah. Go back to Japanese movies. Ozu-style stuff, because those do have to do, you know, those are usually family-oriented, but they also have people that are, like, not in a relationship, and they're people are worried about them, or they have a crush on somebody, and it turns out they're going to be engaged to somebody else, you know. Yeah. It's not, like, hardcore drama. It's all very...
human.
It's all very human, exactly. It's all very slow and, like, mannered.
Yeah,
like, this felt like that, except for there's only three players in this. There's not, like, a family.
No, like, if it was Ozu, there'd be, like, three sisters and a stern father and a mother who is either dead or not really relevant to the plot.
That's not what happens in that last one I watched.
Well, the ones I've seen, it's usually, like, a group of sisters with a stern father of some
kind. I mean, there's definitely a group of sisters, but... No, I don't remember.
I've seen like five, and like there's always like a group of sisters.
Wait a minute, you've seen five? I thought you don't like them.
I like some. Like his last movie is really good. The one with Setsuko Haru, and she's on a bike on the cover. That's a good one.
I don't even know who I'm talking to anymore.
Early Spring, I think.
So.
It's one of the seasons. It doesn't matter.
I gotta look. So, Wedding Ring. I didn't even get into the plot. Noriko and her husband own a jewelry store that was given to them by their her husband's father. And it says in the credits and in the movie, in the subtitles, that her husband's name is Michio. But their last name is Kuki. Maybe that's what. There's a part where she's like yelling his name over and over again, and she's not saying Michio. Maybe she was saying Kuki, but it sounded like she was like, you know, she was saying something that started with an A. So I don't know what his actual name in the thing is, but we'll call him Michio because that's what it says on IMDb.
I heard Michio in that scene.
Sarah?
I couldn't tell, honestly. I felt like some of the time I thought it could have been that word said, like, quickly with other words. But there were other times where I didn't think it sounded like it, and I couldn't really say if it was... I'm not good. I don't have a good enough ear to see if it was or not.
The subtitle translation struck me as trying to be more American friendly because they got that whole bit about being, you know, it could be any Tom, Dick, or Harry. Like, I don't think there's a Japanese equivalent of that.
Nah, probably so, not. And also, like, the transfer wasn't very good either.
Yeah. Well, I enjoy, you know, I was going to get into that. I enjoy, like, most of the time with the, you know, seeing that this was actually, like, taken directly from the film and, you know, we see little spots on there. But this one had some big soundtrack, like, roughness, you know. There's entire scenes where it was, like, the dialogue, but also in the background, the constant, like, sound, you know.
Yeah, like, I'll look at the director again. Kisuke? Kinoshita?
Yes.
Yeah, Kinoshita, he made, like, 2 movies a year for a long time. He made a lot of movies, so I feel like it's a thing of this, some stuff got lost because he has made so much in a short amount of time.
Right, and this was one of his earliest ones, so... And this understandable. One,
yeah.
And not exactly highly regarded, like everyone thinks it's okay.
Yeah. I checked what other websites and it's all the consensus is it's a fine love story, but should be better.
Yeah, I'm sure it is probably mostly recognized because it's got that young Toshiro Mifune.
Yeah.
And not just because he's in those shorty shorts.
Well, it helps.
And those
Yeah, that's not
and those special sandals. Sarah.
Oh my gosh. Did you want to finish talking about that or are we just ready to talk?
No, let me get to it naturally.
Just... Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, when he was running in those stilted sandals, I was like, "Oh my gosh. He could be like it's like he's in high heels or something."
Yeah, I was worried he's going to fall when he was running.
He had it under control somehow. I don't think I would have.
It must have been practiced or something. I mean, they were wearing clothes that were typical to that time period, so maybe he'd been wearing those all his life. I'm not sure.
There was something that felt really American about the movie. Me and Joel had talked about that, too, when we were watching it, that it reminded me of, like... I don't know, An Affair to Remember or something, there was these two people that had a real, you know, moral compass, but they were enjoying each other's company a lot, and there was, like, romance that started or whatever.
Yeah, to me, it did feel a little Western influenced.
Yeah.
I thought it was beautiful looking, though. I'm really impressed.
Cinematography was great. That's the thing that kept me awake because
when you were kept awake.
Yes, like I fell asleep 4 times watching this movie.
Oh wow!
The movie's only 15 minutes long, so no.
I had to rewatch the last half hour about 3 times.
You didn't know about the thrilling hotel scene until later.
No, I just kept falling asleep.
Those relaxing tones.
I thought the music was a little bit weird.
I think the music was the best part. Like they used a lot of different music, but there were some parts that were definitely Western influence. Styles, but a lot of Japanese stuff that was great.
Yeah.
This is like the 3rd episode in a row Hitchcock has come up.
That's because I keep my... It's my fault.
I know. I need to shoehorn some Spike Lee at some point.
This reminded me a lot of Jungle Fever. That's the only movie I know.
Jungle Fever.
Like I said last episode, Jungle Fever is just okay. It's not.
This
Spike's
reminds
best.
Me of what's that bank one with Clive Owen?
Inside Job.
It reminds me of Inside Job. It doesn't. Okay, so yes, Michio, Noriko, husband and wife, own a jewelry store. It was inherited, so Michio comes from money.
That's true.
Michio was in World War II, that is. And basically, he went straight into the military after him and Noriko got married. So they've only really been together, like physically together as husband and wife, for about a year when the story picks up. And at this point, Michio has taken a leave from the store. Noriko is running it all by herself because Michio has some sort of vague
sickness.
Yeah. Like he's just like too tired to deal with life or something like that, you know?
Chronic and, fatigue, I guess.
Yeah.
Or maybe like from PTSD.
Yeah. It makes sense. Like, I think that is actually what they were leaning towards. Like, he was in the war. He came back to try to lead a business life. And it's like, I can't handle what's going on. So he has been living in the vacation home with his father, which is pretty far away. It takes a long train ride to get there. So Noriko only sees him once a week, basically, when she can get away from the store. She takes the train ride back in. And he's been being visited by doctors. And this is when Toshiro Mifune comes in as Takeshi Emma. Dr. Emma, Mr. Emma. They can't decide whether he's a Mr. or a doctor. And he is the replacement doctor because the current doctor had to go jump off a cliff or something. I can't remember. It doesn't matter. He's the doctor right now. And there's kind of a meet cute between him and Noriko where Dr. Emma there is falling on her over and over again on the bus. You know what, dude? Move.
It was just a really tough road, and it was standing room only.
Yeah. No, you're falling on a lady. Go stand next to a guy and fall on him instead.
And he was wearing a business suit with sneakers.
Yep. He's got some trainers on. Yep. White.
American sneakers.
Ugly looking sneakers.
Yeah, it looks like real dad sneakers.
Mm-hmm. The kind of thing I wear almost every day.
Oh.
Except mine aren't white, they're black. Because they're comfortable, like he says.
Okay. But they're real dad sneakers. My dad's like 5 pairs of them.
I thought that they looked better than some sneakers do. They didn't look like those like orthopedic ones that like nurses wear or whatever.
They weren't that far off, but yeah. Later he gets some nice new shoes. Those are some nice shoes.
As a gift from the lady.
From Noriko.
Yeah.
So anyways, he is assisting with helping Michio, you know, giving him medication or whatever else he needs, checking in on him. And they keep running, Noriko and Takeshi, Dr. Emma, keep running into each other on the train or just getting off of the train, all that stuff. And they're like getting lunch together. They spend a lot of time together because it's just, you know, train rides. There's a long time there. Get some conversation in.
They start trying to match up their schedules on purpose, though, especially her.
Yeah, they're friendly with each other.
Yeah.
And things get a little, you know, they get a little spicy when Noriko, I think all she does is, like, touch his hand, right?
Yeah, she, like, touches his hand and he recoils in horror.
Right. She full-on slaps it or something like that, which was like, what? I didn't know if he was recoiling in horror because she slapped his hand or...
She touched him before that. I think she, like, linked arms with him or something.
Mm.
But, yeah, I think at that point he was like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
And, you could tell that he was actually really happy, even though he recoiled in horror.
He's feeling a little conflicted, and later you can see that she is also feeling this confliction. He returns back to there on a very hot summer day and takes off his coat. She goes to hang it, and she can't help but embrace the coat. Like, she feels this urge that she can't resist. I almost thought she was going to smell it. I was going to be like, that's going to be weird for a Japanese 1950s movie. And, she just hugged it like it was a thing. And that's the same day where he decides to go swimming. There's a bunch of children out there swimming in the bay. So he borrows some, not trunks, he borrows a bathing suit.
High-waisted booty shorts.
By the way, Michio is Michio is bedridden, and he's not a bad-looking guy himself. You know, he's a good-looking young man, too.
Yeah, but it's Toshiro Mifune.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, that's like comparing pizza to dirt. But, yeah, so Michio is also writing this poetry, this poetry that, like, is basically telling straight out how he is. On the outside, he's usually acting pretty happy, like, oh, it's so good to see you guys, everything. And his poetry's like, I wish I was dead. Why am I here?
He was kind of annoying me.
Which part?
I understood that he was going through something difficult, and actually my father's disabled. So, like, my whole life I've had, like, a special, like, sympathy for people who are going through a disability. But I feel like he was making it really hard on her. And I feel like, almost in the way, like, in The Face of Another, like,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
in that one, how he's kind of like, my life's terrible, and, you know,
yeah,
he wasn't quite as direct and blaming it on his wife, yeah, in this one as in The Face of Another, but I felt like he was being pretty unlikable because he wasn't
saying what he meant.
He didn't have any positivity in him at all, first of all, which I know if you're depressed, that's hard to do, but...
Yeah. Well, he was doing the thing where you're like, no, I want you to go out and have fun. I want you to be happy and get out there. And, you know, as soon as they leave the room, he just gets this look on his face like... Oh, this is so terrible. Oh, God, why is it like this for me? Like, what if she leaves me? You're kind of pushing her.
It's like he said, it's pitiful.
Yeah.
It's like a pitiful situation where he's like, I want her to have fun, but I'm so depressed. I hear the ocean.
Yeah.
It's like a toned down Bill Macy from Boogie Nights.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, and there's the part in this movie where he takes out that gun.
And it says, in 1950s or 60s. Yeah.
Who's the Philip Seymour Hoffman in this one now? That's never mind. Anyways, so our boy's out there swimming in his shorty shorts, and Noriko goes out there to... on the encouragement of Michio, who's like, you should be swimming too. And she's like, no, I'm not going to swim, but I'll go see him. Like, she takes every opportunity to go, like, say goodbye or to walk him to the place or go see him. So she takes off and goes out to the beach and is waving at Dr. Emma there. He comes back off of the shore and she immediately starts, like, massaging him?
Touching his shoulders.
Like, yeah, rubbing his shoulders and, like, embracing him from behind almost. And he, like, turns around and is like, and then she realizes, which, I mean, I feel bad. I feel bad for her. Like, she feels this familiarity and this closeness that is not proper for their situation because of, like, first of all, doctor-patient thing. Second of all, already married. This is Japan in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just getting more and more strained, the relationship between them, until the point where they take a train ride and get off at an area that they don't normally stop at, where there's a park. And at this park, Toshiro Mifune, Dr. Emma there, he confesses, like, well, first he, like, tries to force her to confess that there's something between them. And when she doesn't, he says, of course, I feel like I like you. They say, I like you. I don't know what they're actually saying, but that's what the subtitles say. Listen, I like you. that's how you get the girls. And rather than start a torrid affair or anything like that, she breaks down. You know, she's crying. And earlier, I forgot to mention this part, she left the house without her wedding ring.
Hence the title of the movie.
Mm-hmm. I don't really feel like the wedding ring was anything before this, and this is about an hour, maybe not an hour into the movie or something like that. But now it's like, oh, sometimes I just take it off and I forget to put it back on. But it really does feel like this is the opportunity, and I think that's what Dr. Emma was thinking too. Like, I don't think she did it on purpose, maybe not subconsciously, whatever.
She's still wearing a wedding ring, though.
She's wearing that band, yeah.
Yeah.
She's just not wearing that big-ass diamond.
It was a pretty ring. I'm not really a diamonds kind of girl, but I thought it had a nice design.
Yeah, it was a nice ring.
Yeah, and
yeah, it looked nice. I wonder if it was a real diamond or if it's a prop.
Oh, you think her husband got her a cubic zirconia or glass?
Well, I mean, since I don't know, like, do you think the studio got them a real ring, or studio was like, nah, fake?
I mean, no, of course they got him a fake ring.
Okay. I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. Like, what would they do for like in a situation where it's a black and white movie? Anyways, they did a lot of things to like be like, oh, this is gold. It's like actually not even gold colored, but it looks what the movies equal gold, you know?
Yeah.
But I think it was just, yeah, it was just some stone.
Probably.
Her husband, Michio, notices that she left her wedding ring, and he's already been kind of sweating, already suspicious about this, and this is more than enough to send him into, like, a terrible mood from then on. He kind of changes character from being a kind of, like,
morose,
sappy, morose person into a kind of angry, morose person.
She's kind of being a little bit obnoxious, too, in my opinion, because she obviously likes him. She's really affectionate towards him. And, if I were him, I would probably be like, you've been throwing me all these signs. Like, I thought you were into me too. Like, but then she, like, comes to her senses as soon as he talks to her about it. And she's like, no, we can't do this.
Right.
Yeah.
And that situation changes like 3 or 4 times, like goes back and forth. Like he's like, oh, no, it was a mistake. I feel ashamed. Like later when they see each other, mm-hmm. nothing happens at this, you know, they just go their separate ways. He's like, it was a mistake anyways. And then a couple scenes later, they're like, it wasn't a mistake. I really have feelings for you.
He says he was in love with her.
Yes. Yeah. And she is not protesting, but she's also, it seems like she's waiting until they get to a certain line. And once that line gets crossed, all of a sudden she is like, no, we can't anymore, which is, it's fine, but it is. Mm-hmm.
It's a good thing he's a respectable guy.
Yeah, it seems unfair to Dr. Emma's feelings, at the very least.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
It's a little selfish of her, because, yeah.
Yeah.
He obviously wants more.
Right. He's not the kind of guy that would be like, it has to be. So it's not something to worry about in this movie. This builds up to, once again, we're back at the vacation house where Michio is resting, but he is very upset. He doesn't know where Noriko and Dr. Emma are because he heard somebody gossiping. The town is now gossiping that they got in about 30 minutes ago, so they should have been there by now. Should have been back at the house. When they show up, Michio runs out of the house through the back door, and they go looking for him. And Noriko realizes what he must be doing. She runs quickly to the beach and finds Michio standing there. She calls out his name. Michio takes off his clothes and gets into the water and tries to swim out. And she is just repeatedly calling him for him. Eventually, Dr. Emma shows up, gets into the water himself, and once again, we get to see Toshiro's tight abs. Just tight. Just grate some cheese on those abs.
Shredded like lettuce.
I'm just kidding. And he, of course, swims in, gets Michio out, who kind of plays it off like, I didn't mean to do that, guys. So, just more awkward city going on here.
In that shot of him bringing him back in, I swore it looked like he was trying not to laugh. It might have just been like him trying to keep his mouth shut because it was like partially underwater, but it looked like he was smiling.
Could be. So that's like the dramatic scene of the movie. I didn't really think anything was happening. I think the most notable thing is that when Toshiro takes Noriko away from the beach before he goes in after Michio. He, like, slides off a rock and falls on his butt, and I'm like, ow!
Yeah.
I've done that before. Yeah, it was. It totally was. He just plays it off. I'd be sitting there going, like, my ass.
Well, he fought in World War II, so he suffered worse. He's a fighter pilot, I think.
Oh.
He was in World War II, I know that much.
The actor or the character?
The actor.
Oh, okay.
There's a picture of him, like, in a military uniform or something.
There's a picture of me in a military uniform. I've never been in the military.
No, there isn't.
Okay.
I thought you were a doctor.
Either way. I like people like me be doctors. Oh, maybe that's why I've been getting these emails from the Navy base that are like, we need an orthopedic surgeon. I'm like, I'm not a doctor, guys. Wow. Way to get your wires crossed. And if you need me to fix your printer, I'm there. So, we're winding up here. It's pretty bad. At this point, Dr. Emma is ready to call it quits as the doctor. He's like, this is not working. You know, you shouldn't get another doctor up there. And Noriko's like, yes, I understand. You know, and this leads up to them having one final meeting wherein Michio tells Noriko, please invite Dr. Emma back to our place for dinner. Noriko takes this lead to go out to the hospital. Mm-hmm. And there's a letter waiting for her from Dr. Emma that says, meet me at this hotel, at this inn. Mm-hmm. And this is something that he proposed before, like, I'm going to wait for you. Even if you don't show up, I'll still be there. Like, this is where the affair is going to happen. And she goes. She goes to this inn where he's waiting. And he's obviously excited when he sees that she's shown up. And they, you know, they play it off. They're setting up dinner. They're getting beer ready. And she says, what does she say? She says, like, oh, my husband wanted to invite you over for dinner.
Do you think she really was thinking about that the whole time she got and went there?
I don't know.
Yeah, right.
What do you think?
I think she just keeps changing her mind again.
Yeah.
Well, she is a woman.
Yeah.
All right.
He sees that she's wearing her wedding ring, bright and proud. We get a close-up on the diamond there, and he realizes this is not what he thought it was. So he tries to play it off like, oh, yeah, of course I'll come over for dinner. But eventually he just can't take it. He tells her, you know, like, can I cry on your lap? And it just is very uncomfortable. Like,
she won't let him.
Right. because this is like a step, once again, an intimacy too far. And he, there's no affair. No affair happens. He suggests that she and her husband should move to the mountains because it'd be much better for his condition. And there they can be isolated. She should take a leave from work. And she decides, yeah, that's a good idea.
Don't they go to the Alps or something?
Yeah, that's what they're going to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Swiss Alps.
Yeah, so they leave Japan for Europe. So, you know, they'll be too far away for their feelings to make things weird.
Yep. The last scene is the is Michio and Noriko going off on the train while Dr. Emma waves goodbye. Like, that's the end of the movie. This longing, these feelings between them are never fulfilled. Noriko isn't a spoiled woman, I guess. I don't know how the morals work over there, but it just felt, yeah. It felt like a lot of stuff that didn't end up being anything.
Yeah. It's kind of anticlimactic a bit, but not in a bad way.
No. No, I don't think I would have enjoyed it if they had, like, ended up hooking up or something like that and then pretending everything was normal.
I think that would have made it worse.
Yeah. What do you think?
I don't know how I would have felt if they ended up together. I think I felt more for the doctor than anybody else in the story. So,
is it because he wore little shorts at one time?
Because he was really hot. No, I'm just kidding. No, I honestly think that even though they were all in kind of an uncomfortable situation, that he's the one that really had the hardest part of it because he didn't have anyone and she was just using him for companionship until she decided that nothing was going to happen and then he was alone again. And he writes her this poem and it's like, oh God.
Two birds, they met, but nothing ever happened. Something like that.
There's this thing about holding on to something that happened to you once and like keeping it inside and like understanding what that is. And he's just going to have this like turmoil, even if he moves on from it, I imagine, like in 2046.
Yeah.
There's still feelings that were never really, rectified or what's the word I'm looking for? There was no... Yeah, fulfillment or closure or whatever.
There's even a part where he, like, says to her, like, I've had relationships before. Like, I was with women while I was in the army, but I've never... This is the first time I've fallen in love.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big deal for him.
Yeah.
And I feel like even though I understand the wife and the husband's feelings and that they're going through something difficult too, I feel like he was just like a moment in their lives and then he's like not there anymore.
Yep.
Yeah, this movie reminded me of my girlfriend's sister's marriage in a weird way. They're both in the Navy and for a while she was stationed in Japan, he was stationed to like DC or the closest base there. And she's in South Carolina at some naval base, and he's still in Maryland. And so they never get to really see each other. And I'll leave it at that.
It sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. The less I say it, the better.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just kind of remind me of, like, the whole, like, longing for each other when I don't know, like, you guys said it best. I fell asleep 4 times watching this movie, so it didn't really do much for me.
Yeah,
I liked it. I think I liked the reality in it.
You would like Ozu.
Yeah, we should watch some Ozu.
Yeah, I'm going to have this in an episode. We're going to do a couple Ozu specials some point in the future.
Cool.
Yep. It reminded me a lot of Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai. No, I'm just kidding.
The first half of that movie is decent, and then the rest happens.
I don't know. I just got a special place for Jarmusch. His movies really work for me. I don't know. But I remember the first time I saw Ghost Dog, I was like 19 or something, and I was like, what is this garbage? Like, there was a part where he shoots a guy. That was cool.
My feeling on Jarmusch is he takes all the things I don't like about French New Wave and Seijun Suzuki and focuses very heavily on it.
Yeah.
Which is why I do not care for his movies. It's too much French New Wave nonsense.
Well, never watch Only Lovers Left Alive because that's one of our favorites.
Well, you know my feelings on that movie.
No, I don't.
I couldn't. I made it halfway through before I turned it off.
Oh, it's so good.
It's way
better than Ganja and Hess. No, I'm just kidding. I haven't seen that. I haven't seen Ganja and Hess.
You don't disrespect Ganja and Hess.
So you want to talk about these other movies?
I like Only Lovers Left Alive.
Yeah, I know.
That's all I was going to say.
Spencer thinks it sucks.
That's okay. He's entitled to...
No, he's not.
Well, I can have friends that have different opinions than me.
Oh, okay.
is there any comparison between this and Scandal? I can't really figure out anything, really.
The TV show?
No. Yes.
Well, the president is having an affair with somebody. Yeah. Well, other than it being like a of the time period, real time story, and of course, Toshirô Mifune is in both.
Mm-hmm.
His characters are different. Like, he's not mild mannered in Scandal the way he is in this one. Not really. They're both very low key. That's about all I could say about it.
Yeah.
But if you compare Scandal to this movie, Scandal's going to come out looking really good, in my opinion.
I would agree too, given it's one of my favorite Kurosawas.
Yeah. But there is the unpropriety of like a man and a woman walking to hanging out together kind of thing that it has in common because.
Yeah.
That starts off with, oh, he showed up on his motorbike and they're at the same hotel. And this one is like, oh, they left the train station 30 minutes ago and they're not where they're supposed to be. But there's not nearly that much in Wedding Ring. There's not other people gossiping except for that one scene, which is why that scene kind of stands out like, oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I feel like there might have been a longer cut that the studio was like, nope, make it 90 minutes.
Listen, this guy fell asleep four times already.
That's what I got, too. I was kind of wondering if there were other pieces of the story that were cut out just to make it shorter.
Yeah, Kinoshita, he made a lot of movies really quickly at this time, so I feel like is it probably just like cut down. I feel like there's a bigger movie here that's probably lost to time now.
Could be.
Yeah.
So, do you have any other movies from 1950 that both of you like?
I do. Sarah, did you find anything?
This part. Did you tell her about this part?
Yeah, literally 5 seconds before we started recording.
Okay.
Well, me and Joel watched La Ronde.
La Ronde.
I really liked that.
is a movie.
That's the opposite of this movie.
Basically, yeah.
Jeez, I didn't think about that till right now.
La Ronde is a movie from 1950, directed by Max Ophuls, and Max Ophuls is kind of a masterclass like filmmaker. But this one is based on a play, and takes a series of characters who, like, we start off with, say, a man and a woman, and they have some sort of fling or affair, or maybe they don't, maybe they just flirt. And then the woman goes off, and she meets another man, and they have some sort of relationship, and then the man from that relationship goes off, and the story continues, so on and so forth, with each character leaving one storyline, entering another storyline. And it is all about love. It's got some very funny parts. It's cute, and it's really well done. Mm-hmm. It's not my favorite Ophuls, but it's good. Hmm. Do you have anything else to say about it?
Yeah, it makes light of all the issues that are so serious in this movie about fidelity and honor and, you know, loyalty and, like romance and flirtation and everything. And in this, it's like, that's really serious. But in that movie, there's a real sense of humor about it. And it's like the polar opposite opinion. Like, I would say that in France at the same year, there was something coming out that was like poking fun at morality. And this is like putting morality like way up there.
Yeah. It's like everybody does it. And this one's like, no one ever should.
Yeah,
that's a really good comparison, La Ronde and Wedding Ring. Just culturally, like, look at what's going on here.
Yeah, couldn't be more different. They're both black and white, too. And I really like the, this movie had, like, contrast. I really liked that. I liked the cinematic quality and the, he was wearing a lot of white. But, like, you could see his hair and his features, like, really clearly in, and the landscape sometimes with the rocks and stuff. It was, like, really clear definition between blacks and whites and grays. And I liked that a lot. But in La Ronde. It's a little bit more muddled compositionally. I do like the style it was filmed in, but it's a lot more gray.
Spencer, you got one?
I'm going through, and I have seen a couple. And I found one I saw on Criterion a while ago. It's not great, but it's fun. It's called The Baron of Arizona. It stars Vincent Price, and it's based off a true story in the late 1800s, like 1890s, early that time period, where this con man scammed the U.S. government into making them think he owned all of Arizona, and so for a brief time he owned all of the land and that is now Arizona.
Wow.
through a scam, and the movie is not historically accurate. It does some stuff accurately, but for the most part, kind of doesn't, as you'd expect. But Vincent Price, you know, he chooses scenery like he always does. He's a whole lot of fun. It's not a great movie, but he makes it worth it.
Yeah.
Cool. I'll have to check it out.
And I would recommend a book from, not from 1950, but from a few years after this.
Boo. Because
I feel strongly about a lot of movies from this year. It's a book called The Death of Grass by John Christopher. He is a British writer. He wrote science fiction, mostly post-apocalyptic stuff. And The Death of Grass is about all the plants on Earth slowly dying from a mysterious disease. And it's very grim. It's like 180 pages, so it's a quick read. And it's really good. It's really quick, really brutal. It was made to a movie in 1970 called Don't Play of Grass, which was a U.S. title, which is a stupid title. And I don't want to see the movie because the book is so grim and ends on such a grim note. I just don't want to see any adaptation of it at all. But read the book, The Death of Grass, or No Blade of Grass, depending on where you find it.
Yeah.
It's really good, Joel. It's short.
Once I learn how to read, I will watch that.
You should read it.
Yeah. So the other movie I wanted to mention is my personal favorite animated Disney movie, which is Cinderella.
Okay. I asked Heidi this on her episode. Is that the one with the dragon in it?
No. No, that's Sleeping Beauty.
Okay. I didn't watch it growing up, so they just merged in my mind as the same thing.
Sleeping Beauty is way better, okay. In my opinion.
Is there an evil witch in the Cinderella? No, you explain it. I don't know Cinderella.
Cinderella is a story of a blonde lady and her evil stepmother.
She's a blonde
and
lady.
Two evil stepsisters. She talks to mice. There's a cat named Lucifer, which I didn't know what that meant when I was a kid. Yes.
Disney did. Wow.
And then, of course, there's Prince Charming.
How did the Hays Code allow Lucifer as a cat name?
That's perfectly within the Hays Code because it's an evil cat. So,
oh, okay.
Who gets it in the end? Spoiler.
As a fairy godmother.
I like the way it's. Oh, yes. And that's probably the most. That's the fantastical part. The fairy godmother gives her the glass slippers. He turns a pumpkin into a coach.
Sings bippity boppity boo.
Yep. Sings bip bop. Bippity bop bop.
Okay. It's that one. Okay, I know what you're talking about now.
Okay. Anyway.
The spell's broken at midnight. She has to run home. She loses a slipper.
Mm-hmm.
But she danced with the prince, and he loves her.
Yes, and they sing a song while they're dancing.
It's a rags-to-riches story. Actually, it's a riches-to-rags-to-riches story, because her father was really cool and nice and wealthy, but he dies after he marries the evil stepmother. And that's what makes her Cinderella, because she cleans the chimney.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wait, Cinderella means cleans the chimney?
Cinder?
Yes, it's Spanish for cleans the chimney.
It's cinder. Cinderella.
I never thought that deeply into it.
Anyway, it's my favorite because I like the music a lot. I really like the animation. I like the way the storyline plays in between Cinderella, you know, having to deal with these terrible relatives and like stuff.
I think
and
you
then
mean
like
these terrible women. Am I
and
right?
What the mouse are doing?
The mouse are doing.
You're messing me up. The mice are doing in order to get her where she needs to go. And I don't know why it's my favorite. It just is. All right.
Okay.
You know
my
what?
Favorite is Alice in Wonderland, the animated one.
Boring.
It's perfect.
It's really good. It's really good.
It's a little dark.
Dumbo is dark. I can't sit. It always made me sad as a kid.
Did you cry during that part where Dumbo's mom is like rocking him back and forth through the jail cell?
I had to stop it when they started whipping the mom in the beginning because my nephew was like horrified.
Your nephew needs to learn. Keep your place, otherwise you get whipped.
Don't show him Pinocchio. That's also kind of depressing one, too.
Yeah, Sleeping Beauty, I think, is way better. But Sleeping Beauty is born a princess, and then this evil person comes, this evil whatever, witch, dragon person.
So that's one with Maleficent?
Maleficent.
Yeah. Okay. And basically, they send her away to live in the woods with these three little fairy ladies to protect her because she's supposed to prick her finger on a spindle and fall asleep in a spell.
But that's from a completely different year.
Yeah.
Okay. I know the difference now.
Yeah.
And thank Beauty you, and Sarah. The Beast is the sure. one with a beast.
From this? Oh, go ahead.
I like to add that I didn't know that the character in Sleeping Beauty wasn't named Beauty until I went to Disney World for the first time last year.
No, they're like Aurora.
Yeah, I had no clue it was Aurora. I thought her name was Beauty.
Disney princesses and the movies they're involved in. Listen to As If podcast.
Okay.
To be on called the ear trumpet audio.
Yes.
Aurora
Snorealis. Oh yeah.
I've seen part of Harvey too. I haven't finished it, but it's from this year. And Jimmy Stewart is pretty funny in it.
Yeah, he's good and everything. Yeah, is there anything else movie-wise from this year you want to talk about?
No, I think we've got everything else covered, basically.
There are at least two movies that I should see from this year, but I haven't yet.
Oh, sure, what?
All About Eve and Sunset Boulevard.
Oh, yeah. We talked
about... I
haven't
seen either of those.
Yeah, Sunset Boulevard last week with Josh.
Yeah, Josh, if you're listening, I plan on watching Sunset Boulevard, even though it's Billy Wilder, I'll give it a shot.
It's a classic.
Classic doesn't always mean good.
Yes, it does. Every not time. It's like a ganja and Hess. It's as classic as that.
Well, it's... Yeah. That's a perfect movie. Sam Wayman did a great soundtrack to it.
Yeah. So what are we doing next time?
The next pairing is from 1991, the year I was born. Yep. Yeah. Okay, so I meant to mention this earlier. So in Scandal and Wedding Ring, Toshirô Mifune is 30 years old. And he looks like a fully grown man at 30.
But don't people normally look fully grown at 30?
No, but he doesn't look... But, like, to me, he looks like a grizzled dude.
Well, you know, back then, 30-year-olds did look older than they do now.
Yeah. Yep. Maybe it was a war. Probably made him look like grizzled maybe. And, like, a badass already.
Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah, 1991 with the movie...
Sorry.
Jesus Christ, what is it called? Okay, the non-Kurosawa movie we're doing is a Studio Ghibli picture called Only Yesterday that I hear is really good.
I love this stuff.
And the Kurosawa one is Rhapsody in August. Which I don't know much about. All I know is Richard Gere is in it. And that's kind of all I know.
And this takes place in Harlem? Is that correct?
Sure.
Because it's Rap City?
And it takes place in Japan on the anniversary of the bomb or something.
Oh, I thought it was like a West Coast, East Coast thing, you know?
No, it's about the effects of the bomb during the war or something.
Ah, so it's like Black Rain.
Sure, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So that one is not on Criterion, so it's not streaming on Amazon, so we gotta buy it or something.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah. And Only Yesterday, I'm pretty sure it's easily available. It's Studio Ghibli. It's all available.
Usually. There was a long time where you couldn't get any of that Studio Ghibli stuff unless you got like a VHS or one of the import DVDs. And then Disney bought up like all their stuff and then finally started re-releasing them. But I'm sure this one is available somewhere.
Yeah, I talked to a friend and she has like a special edition DVD.
Oh, she's got the hookup.
Yeah, she's a big anime. She might be on the episode, might not. I haven't asked her yet.
Ask her now.
She doesn't even listen to this.
Oh, whatever.
I can cut this part out. It's not relevant.
Nobody does.
So, plugs.
So, Sarah, do you want to plug any of your stuff there, like your website?
Sure. I'm an artist, and
I'll be the judge of that. No, I'm just kidding.
I make watercolor paintings, prints, jewelry. I've worked in photography and textiles too. And my website is www.sarahkathleenroberts.com, and it's Sarah with an H. And that's my handle on Instagram, too, if you're at all interested. That's my focus. But we also do a podcast together as well.
Yep, every week, Please Don't Send Me Outer Space releases a new episode on Mondays about science fiction or fantasy movies. This week, we're going to be talking about Groundhog Day. I think this episode of High and Low is dropping after that. But after that, we're going to be talking about Fern Gully, The Last Rainforest, and we just go all over the place, basically. Ruining your childhood memories and bringing you new ones that go, hey, maybe that movie wasn't as good as I thought it was. Just kidding, it's all great.
Are you going to ever do that movie I sent you, The Great Yokai War?
No, we threw that away.
Okay.
I'm just kidding. Answer it.
Jeez.
I haven't decided yet. That's not the. You're crazy. Do you want us to do that as a pick or something like that?
Yeah. I sent it to you for that exact purpose.
Because I still have to watch that Chinese Dragon Ball movie that Aaron got me for Christmas one year.
No, you don't. Dragon Ball is unnecessary garbage.
No, it's a live action Chinese movie, though.
That anything Dragon Ball is garbage.
He probably does kung fu.
It doesn't matter. We should watch Great Yokai War. It's a really fun, weird Japanese quote-unquote kids movie, family movie.
Isn't it directed by somebody famous?
Takashi Miike.
Oh, yeah, Takashi Miike.
Okay. Yeah, it's his take on a family movie.
Cool.
So, yeah, it's pervy and really trippy and weird.
And violent.
I don't remember violence. I remember, like, kind of weird demon stuff.
That's because you're numb to it. What about you? You gotta plug anything?
Oh yeah, me. Someone I fight. I do old TV reviews this month or next month. I don't know. Anyway, the next review coming up is of the show Ghost Story, which was retitled Circle of Fear after like 3 episodes because it did so poorly in the ratings. In that name change did not help. It still did poorly in ratings. An episode's called Elegy for Vampire. It's about a vampire. So it's like a... Yeah. So if you want to watch it, you watch Ghost Story or Circle of Fear. I forgot the title was when the episode came out. And
I thought you were going to say they changed the name because it didn't have any ghosts in it.
Oh, no, they changed the name because ABC was like, this shit's not getting any viewers. We got to change it to get people interested. And
well,
like,
you know.
Circle of Fear, and they're like, oh, that didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, Sarah's got to get ready to go.
Okay. Yeah, that's it.
Okay. So, we'll see you all next week. Thank you for listening.
That was fun. Thanks, Spencer. Thanks, guys. Welcome.